Back together again, you and I chatting it up. Brand new week, Monday, July 7th, 2025 on Connecticut Today. I open the show with my thoughts on billionaire Elon Musk's promise to push forward and form what he's now calling the America Party. Former Republican state legislator Joe Markley dropped by to chat about next year's Connecticut gubernatorial race, while commuter advocate Jim Cameron detailed the next fare increase coming for Metro North commuters. So the question is, on a lot of the minds of people out there, where is a voter to go? In other words, what is your viable choice if you're kind of conflicted over stuff, right? And you don't fit into the regular cookie-cutter mentality of, oh, I'm a Democrat, or, oh, I'm a Republican here. Where is a voter in this day and age, as we speak, just after we celebrate birthday number 249 for this nation? Where is a voter to go if they feel that neither side of the aisle, or if they're not registered with a party, neither of the offerings that, for whatever reason, the main political parties give us every 2 years, every 4 years, every 6 years or whatever, just don't fit what we like and what we want? And the reason I bring this up today is because that guy, again, is added. You can love him or hate this guy. Now, I happen to love this guy. Elon Musk is shaking it up again, shall we say? Now, Elon Musk over the weekend said this on Saturday. He wants to launch his America Party. This after he posted a poll to his X account on Friday, Independence Day, asking followers whether he should create a new party. Now, I know we hear this all the time, and when we say a third party here, let's, for the sake of our argument and discussion today, say a third major party to go up against the D's and the R's. I know there's a Green Party out there. I know the American Communists still exist. I know the Democratic Socialists exist. I know the Independent Party exists in Connecticut. There are a lot of third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth parties out there. Let's talk. We know what we're talking about here, but I feel I have to say that. So let's talk about just the, you know what I mean, the major parties. The billion-dollar donor class of both the Democratic Party nationally and the Republican Party nationally, and the two parties here in Connecticut, despite the relative soft numbers of the Republican Party, they do the best job they can and smack each other around, rhetorically, not physically, of course, in Hartford. So I know a lot of you people may call in within a few minutes and say, well, we have third and fourth parties. We do, but we don't. Yes, bravo for the Greens. Bravo for the working family parties, party affiliates. Bravo for the communists, the democratic socialists. I get that. I understand that. But none of these parties are offering a viable third choice here. They're just not. So if anybody can get it done, I would think it would be Elon Musk with his X platform, the billions of dollars he has, the anger that he now has at Donald Trump. But think about it now. Before you say no or yes to this, think about it. Is it time? And I know what you're going to say. Well, it never worked. Yeah, it kind of hasn't worked. I mean, we had George Wallace. That didn't work, thank God. We had John Anderson. That didn't work. Would have been interesting. We had Ross Perot, didn't work, but it would have been interesting. But none of those gentlemen and none of the major people that are able to break through and get on the ballot really have a major party backing them. Could Elon Musk pull this off? So it's why we start with this today. Let's have some fun with this after we just got past another Independence Day celebration here. So I ask to open this up here. We're going to get into this a little bit more because I'll tell you why I think this can fly. Honestly, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Elon Musk says he's forming a new America Party. That's what he called it. He said that over the weekend. Does the U.S. need a viable third major party? There are plenty of third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, blah, blah, blah parties around there. You know what I mean. They need a party. Maybe many people think you got to have a party to play and knock heads and smack heads with the big boys. Could Elon Musk pull this off? And if this became a viable thing, if Musk was able to seed this with his money, would you choose to join it? All right, 203-333-9422-333-WICC. So would you join the America Party? Are you frustrated like a lot of people might be because of the litmus tests that we're doing here with you know how parties work, right? Well, if you're a Democrat, you can't be pro strength on the border, even though you may be pro social services programs, you may be pro abortion rights, you may be pro SNAP benefits, but you know that litmus test is going to kick you out if you're pro gun or you're pro border control. Then on the other side, how many Republicans will push you away if, you know, you're pro Second Amendment and you're pro low taxes, but, you know, you want to have a citizenship for illegal or undocumented migrants? In other words, could a third party work if the third party took a little bit from column A and a little bit from column B? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. And would there be, of course, a concerted effort by the powers that be in both the Democrat and Republican parties, maybe, in fact, to make sure this doesn't work, right? I mean, why wouldn't they push back on this, eh? And let's start it off today on the phones at 333-9422, talk or text Doug in Westport to lead us off. Hello, Doug. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Did you have a good Independence Day weekend?
Yes, I did, Doug. It was quite wonderful and profitable. Yes.
I did, too.
Yeah.
We live in a fabulous country.
Yes,
we
do.
We live in a remarkable country.
Yes,
and,
we do.
I have a couple of responses to you. I want to say there's one thing that I will quote Joe Biden on.
Okay.
Where I think we can all agree he was right.
Yeah.
Joe Biden was fond of saying that America is an idea, and it really is.
Okay.
It's the Constitution, it's liberty, it's freedom.
All right.
It's not allegiance to king. It's not an ethnically based country.
No.
It's an idea, and he was right when he said those.
Yep.
I would be. I'm a Democrat.
Yeah.
I would be interested in a third party. Mm-hmm. I would be intrigued if Elon Musk tied up with Andrew Yang, who you may remember.
Sure.
Yang has been working on a third party effort called the Forward Party.
Mm-hmm.
So he's built some infrastructure, and he's a smart guy. He's built some infrastructure, and Musk and Yang might want to talk to each other. You talked about the parties and you described them in polarizing terms.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem. I was just reading another article about that over the weekend, how the those of us who are moderates, who are in the middle.
Well, that's the problem, right? I mean, there's no real home for you.
You said the cookie cutter, but actually what's happened is the shape of the cookie cutter changed.
Yeah,
The cookie cutter is not stamping out the same shape. My Democratic Party that I grew up with is based on economics and prosperity for the middle class, mm-hmm. the working class, and doesn't have a lot of the litmus tests that you talked about.
Yeah.
I worked in another state for many years. I'm from Connecticut.
Okay.
I worked in another state for many years, and I worked for the governor, who was a Democratic governor.
Yeah.
And he had a 100% rating with the NRA.
See?
From when he was a senator. He was a classic, what I would call an economic Democrat.
Doug, it's interesting. I get what you mean, and it's interesting because, for example, if that person, say, that you worked with, and I don't need to know what state, but that's a perfect example.
I'm happy to tell you, it was Indiana.
Okay.
The governor was somebody you probably never heard of. His name was Frank O'Bannon. He served two terms.
Yep.
And he was the last Democratic governor. No, he was. He was the last person elected governor, that Democratic governor in the year 2000. Indiana hasn't had a Democratic governor since.
Now, Doug, what do you think would happen if you had that scenario here in Connecticut where, you know, for example, you had a candidate who, you know, is a Democrat, for example, and checked off all the boxes that Democrats love here in Connecticut, and then, though, somebody would find out that same kind of candidate, Doug, wait a minute, this guy's got 100% rating from the local and national NRA. What do you think would happen to that candidate here in Connecticut?
I think he would have a very difficult primary, but it's possibly winnable.
Yeah.
I don't dismiss it out of hand. He might win on other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Depends how you fashion the campaign.
And Doug, thank you for the call. Good to hear from you, my friend. There, Doug in Westport with some real-life examples there. But let's take Doug's example. What about here in Connecticut, where we have an attorney general, we have members of the legislature on the Democratic side who regularly demonize gun owners and those people who shoot and keep guns for their self-defense and want to own an AR-15? Now, that gentleman, and Doug, thank you, I do remember the governor's name out there. It's been a while, you're right. But he'd have no shot here in the state, at least to get through the primary process. Why? Because everything in this state with the Democratic Party is a litmus test. Can you imagine if the Dems said, hey, this guy or this gal, he or she's right out of central casting. Oh, my God, look at this person. Absolutely freaking fantastic. But there's a problem. Well, what's the problem? Well, guess what? They own guns. Well, okay, so what do they own, a pistol or a sporting rifle? No, they own an AR-15. You know what that would mean with the State Central Committee. See, I would love for this to happen. I really would. And I know there are a lot of people on both sides, Democrats and Republicans, do this, saying, oh, my God, you can't do that. Why can't I? Why can't I? Well, if you do, it'll split our vote and let the other side win. Well, too bad. Too bad. I'm sorry. At this point in my life, I don't care what you think. We need to elect the best people, and we need to stop with the litmus test. Do you think in any Democratic state a pro-life Democrat could be elected? The answer is no. The answer is no. A pro-life Democrat, an anti-abortion Democrat, can never win a blue state. Why? It's a blue state. Do you think any Republican could win a red state in a sheer red state with advocating for tougher gun laws? No, wouldn't happen. And I know what you're saying. Well, that's what the parties exist for, Paul. Yeah, I know that. And that's why the country is now divided almost completely down the middle. Half the country, when Trump does something, hey, that's what we voted for. The other half, hey, I hope he burns in hell. That's not healthy for the country. It's not. It's not healthy. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Elon Musk. And I'm already getting some blowback to the question, well, this guy's, yeah, whatever. Musk is crazy. We know that. Brilliant people who want to do things are oftentimes nuts. It's because they have no governor. They have no filter. They have different complexes that make them say, how dare you tell me I can't do anything? I'm going to show you. Elon Musk, Thomas Edison, some of the great scientists of all time, some of the great politicians of all time. These people didn't care what you think because they had a vision. Howard Hughes, in the end, he was a crazy man, and he was also brilliant. What do you think? Talk or text 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Elon Musk says he's going to form a new America Party. Does the U.S. need a viable third major political party, and would you join such a party that's being proposed by Mr. Musk? One of the things of note today is a liberal member of the Connecticut Democratic, the Democratic caucus there in the state house, joining the call for Governor Ned Lamont to not seek a third term as Connecticut's chief executive by Nick Gauthier. We'll talk about that as the afternoon goes on, which led me to wonder who can give us his or her look as to where the race stands right now, whether the governor will run or not. And joining us right now is a gentleman I've spoken to numerous times, former multi-term Republican state legislator, state senator from the Southington area, and the 2018 Republican nominee for Lieutenant Governor. Joe Markley's on the phone. Joe, it's Paul. It's been too long. How are you?
I'm great and delighted to be talking to you, Paul, and always happy to talk to you on the air or off the air, frankly. I enjoy it.
Well, so. Thank you, Joe. Joe, give us your, before we get to the minutiae here, Governor Ned Lamont, you know, Joe, in a blue state, this guy, at least up until now, and who knows who the Republican challenger may be, who knows who, if he may run again, I think Ned Lamont, in his political strategy, has tried to carve out kind of a sweet spot here where, you know, you only upset 50% of the people 50% of the time. You know what I mean? How do you assess him so far?
Well, the word that used to be used for it back in the Bill Clinton days was triangulation.
Yeah.
Which is to say, Clinton looked at it and said, hey, I got these conservative Newt Gingrich and the Republicans. I've got people to my left. I can present myself as a moderate. And that's exactly what Lamont has done. And he has been a moderate on a couple of important issues. You know, vetoing this housing bill recently mm-hmm. was a move that he knew was going to cause some heat from the left wing of the Democratic Party, which is a big wing at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But with the average voter, I think it puts him in a pretty strong position. And, you know, the other thing he's got going for him is I think his support is thin. I don't think people have I'll die for Ned Lamont feeling. But I think people like him. I met him in the campaign trail, and I kind of liked him. I thought, oh, he's a nice enough guy. Now, being a nice guy is not doesn't qualify to be governor of Connecticut.
Yeah.
But if you want to run, it's very much an advantage. So here he is with two big problems. He's a popular governor. The state is perceived as doing okay, although really we are hollowed out and in financial crisis, but nobody seems to realize that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got two problems. One is what you talked about, which is the progressives really want somebody who's further left. And he's going to face a challenge, presumably, from somebody out of that group. I think that might be good for him in the long run because the people that run against him, the person that runs against him, is likely to come across as such a radical that it'll drive people to Lamont. But it's still a problem. And the other problem is there's been a lot of questionable stuff going on in that administration.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that Lamont himself is likely to be tied to any of it. But it's kind of like Warren Harding or Ulysses Grant. It gives you the feeling the guy in charge is not paying close attention to what those people around him are doing. And that could reach a critical mass and cause him a problem. So despite his popularity, I think that the shine could come off of him pretty quick if he has a strong challenge from the left, and then there's a good Republican candidate that goes right after him in the fall.
Yeah, you know what? A month or two or so ago, Joe, I would have thought, a left-wing Democrat, they'll get 15, 20, 25%. Then we saw what happened in New York City, Joe, a few weeks ago. And, you know, my son lives in Queens. I used to work in the city 3 or 4 days a week pre-COVID, so I'm pretty much in touch there. The nation, the world is watching. Could a Zoran Mamdani kind of effect, you think, Joe, happen here in Connecticut? Could somebody sneak up on Ned Lamont and beat him in a primary?
I don't think so. I think that it's somewhere between 15% and 50%. There's more hardcore progressives in Connecticut than there used to be.
Yeah.
And there's enough to put together a pretty good campaign, but I don't think it's like New York City. And another problem they've got is that Lamont has the money as a self-funder, that if he sees someone sneaking up on him and he says, gee, I need to spend a couple of million, he can do it. So, I mean, literally, he can do it. So that's going to be a problem for him, too. And remember, too, Andrew Cuomo was a very flawed candidate.
Yeah.
there's a world of difference between Ned Lamont and Andrew Cuomo. So I think that he could cause Lamont some trouble. We got to remember that that's how Lamont got on the scene.
Yes.
He snuck up and beat Joe Lieberman.
Joe Lieberman, yeah.
Challenging him from the left, basically. So the possibility is there, but it helps to have the cash.
Former Republican State Senate member Joe Markley joining us. Joe, also the 2018 Republican nominee for Lieutenant Governor. Joe, on the Republican side here, interesting, Jen Tooker's in the race. We have Erin Stewart inching close to getting the self-financing money she needs. And our friend here at the radio station, Ryan Fazio, now being mentioned by a lot of the pundits here. You know, I wonder if Joe... the matchup, let's say for sake of argument here, ended up being Ned Lamont versus either Ryan Fazio or Erin Stewart. It's kind of a generational gap there. Could the Republicans sneak up and win this or not?
Well, you never know. A couple of things have to go wrong for Lamont. And I think maybe the biggest one is this question of we'll call it corruption or bad behavior in his administration, if that can become a real story. And the other thing is you need a Republican candidate that is willing to go right after Lamont, to call him out on his record and to say, hey, this guy is not the moderate that he claims to be. He's a liberal. He spends a lot of money. He may not spend as much as the craziest people in the Democratic Party want him to spend, but he's still spending more than the state can afford. He's giving contracts to union employees that we can't afford to honor. And I think that both Ryan Fazio and Erin Stewart make an interesting contrast to him. I got to say that I think, although Ryan Fazio is the most recent name to appear, I think he's a very strong candidate in a Republican primary because Erin Stewart has always presented herself as a moderate, bordering on a liberal Republican. And if you can run to the right, you don't have to run too far to the right. But if you're the candidate who's perceived as being the most conservative in a Republican primary, you're in a very good position. I know that myself because I ran a primary against Erin Stewart.
Yeah.
And not Jen Tooker, but Jamie Stevenson, a very similar three-way race. And I got almost 50% of the vote against those two women, both of whom were good candidates in different ways. I think Ryan Fazio is a better candidate than I was. Younger, better looking, articulate. I mean, he really has a lot going for him. And I think that he's going to pick up a lot of institutional support in the Republican Party. And he can make a principled argument. He's not a raving ideologue, but he's a man who has some basic beliefs that orient him in a way that I don't think Erin Stewart has. And I think that Ryan could be I would bet on Ryan in a primary as things stand right now, if that comes down to it. And then I would say Ryan would have a good chance to break through if anyone could, a fresh face, and yet somebody who has political experience, not
sure,
like some of the candidates we've run recently in the Republican Party.
Interesting. And finally, Joe, in about the minute we have left, are you at all surprised these statements, these editorials, at the tone of some of the rank and file in the House Democrats? Just their anger is palpable at two of those vetoes that the governor made, which are completely within his purview to do on the housing bill and on the bill that would have paid people who are on strike. Are you surprised at the vitriol on these or not?
Paul, I am surprised, and I'm surprised that people have stuck their necks out so far, so early on this. And I guess I'd say this is what comes of being so sure of yourself, as these progressives are. It's a little scary, but it's the spirit of the French Revolution a little bit, which is if you're not as with us as we think you ought to be, off with your head.
Wow. And we'll leave it at that. Joe Markley. Joe, Joe, thanks. On the ramp up to the race, we'll have you on more often. Joe, good to chat with you. Take care, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you, Paul.
All right. Thank you. Joe Markley there. Only Joe Markley could end this segment with a reference to the French Revolution. If you, like me, occasionally or maybe at one time on an everyday basis, I used to do it, ride the Metro North commuter rail line, it's likely going to cost you a little bit more. Joining us right now, well-known commuter advocate, his column Talking Transportation can be found in many outlets, including the Connecticut Mirror. Jim Cameron drops by. Mr. Cameron, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Dr. Pacelli, how are you? I'm fine, thanks.
I'm good, Jim. Thank you. Fares, Metro North, what's the latest for people wanting to know, Jim?
Well, I have this recurring sense of deja vu all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, another fare increase is coming our way. 5% fare increase September 1st, and another 5% increase July 1st of next year. Let's see, 5 and 5. That's a 10% okay. Fare increase in the next 12 months. I've been at this commuter advocacy thing for over 20 years, and I have been to my share of fare hearings, mm-hmm. which must be held.
Yeah.
And, the cynic in me just goes, fare hearings are just political theater. It's all baked into the budget. This was all required by the fact that the legislature came up a little bit shy. They only allocated, $316 million for operation of the DOT, and they needed $327. So the only way to help fill that gap was a fare increase. And if that's, the decision that was made by the legislature, why go through the process of claiming that you care about what the public says? There were hearings. There were research papers done. There was all kinds of work done by the DOT mm-hmm. for what's really a moot point. The fares are going up.
And, Jim, as far as you know, that's for everything, right? Just single tickets, round trip, the multi-day passes. Is this 5% and 5 across the board as far as we know it? Or are there any discounts or not?
Anything that starts in Connecticut is going to go up or ends in Connecticut. So mm-hmm. here's an example. If you wanted to go from New Haven to Grand Central, that'll go from $24.50 one way to $26 with the first hike and then to $27.25. So it's getting more expensive. Your listeners in cars right now are nodding their heads and going, you're just giving me another reason to not take the train.
Mm-hmm.
I may not be happy with the traffic crawling up I-95, but at least I'm not paying through the nose with the 10% fare increase. And, they're right. The more you raise these fares, P.S., they've told me there's not going to be any increase or improvement in service. It's going to be the same old, same old. So we're getting whacked 10%. I don't think inflation is running at 10% a year.
No.
But when it comes to fares on Metro North, they certainly are. So it's getting expensive.
Yeah, and one of my pet peeves, Jim, and I've said this for years and years and years, exactly, give me something for those fare increases. And I know stuff that you've written and other people, well, it's to cover operating expenses. But Jim, I don't know how you felt, but there have been many an early morning or late night I've ridden the New Haven line end to end, New Haven Union Station, all the way to Grand Central Terminal in New York to see my son or go to work in the city. And I'm saying to myself, they can't block out money for an MTA cop, even on the rush hour trains. Jim, I got to tell you, the and I know it's expensive, and I know police officers get paid, I get this, but the lack of operational security on these trains, no offense to anybody running the train, drives me crazy. It does.
Well, that's a whole other issue. I got a contact from a commuter. One of the things I love about my work is mm-hmm. I hear regularly from commuters.
Mm-hmm.
When they're frustrated and they have nowhere else to turn, I'm here for you. I'm here for you guys.
Okay.
Somebody told me they were on a 6:30 a.m. train from New Haven going to their work in New York City. They got on the car, and it smelled of reefer.
Oh.
Now, It's bad enough that somebody was smoking on the train,
yep.
but smoking marijuana at 6:30 in the morning.
Well,
and I don't think it was lingering from the night before either, but somebody was on that train bright and early trying to get a good buzz on the way to work.
Yeah, and Jim, you know what? You can't blame the conductors, and you can't blame the motormen and motorwomen. Security is not their job, and it just over the years. And okay, you see an occasional cop when Christmas, St. Patrick's Day, obviously, sometimes on Thanksgiving, or maybe a heavy train into and out of the city on a weekend for sightseeing, but. You know, you would think over the years, and maybe this has been asked about, Jim, I don't know, where we could have a little better security on the trains. But, hey, maybe I'm just pie in the sky. I don't know. I don't get it.
You're pie in the sky, Paul. We don't have enough cops. The MTA police, which is responsible for, monitoring safety on the trains, has only a handful of officers that serve up in Connecticut. Most of them are down in Westchester, where they have much more responsibility and operations. So if the conductor, yes, the conductor is not to blame for the misbehavior of passengers. But if they want to, the best they can do is to stop the train at a station, call local cops, delay hundreds and hundreds of commuters because one bozo doesn't want to pay his ticket or he, you know, won't put out his spliff or whatever he's doing that's wrong. That's the only thing that can be done in that case. Now, that said, I feel safe riding the trains.
Yeah.
I don't think they are unsafe. Two negatives in a row, that's not good. I feel safe, but I agree. If there's a concern that passengers have, if there's a perception of a lack of safety, then there's a lack of safety. And you're not going to get people to take the train if they're unsure of their safety on the train. That's just another reason. They're going to raise the fares. I don't feel safe on the trains. I hear the stuff that goes on in the train.
Yeah.
I heard the guy on the radio talking about people smoking marijuana on the trains at 6:30. I'll stay in my car. I'll put up with the traffic. You know, at least I get to listen to the radio.
That's
loud.
Right. That's right. Loud at ear-splitting levels. Jim Cameron talking transportation. Jim, thank you, my friend. Be good, and we'll chat down the road. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Be well.
I appreciate it. Jim Cameron there.